Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we are studying Yechezkel Perek Hei. This perek contains the final symbolic nevuah in a series of four symbolic acts. Yechezkel was first commanded to engrave an image of Yushalayim on a brick. Second, he was to lie facing the brick for 390 days, followed by 40 days on his other side. Third, during that time, he was to eat a mixture of grains. These dramatic acts were to serve in the place of eloquent speeches and were to convince the nation already exiled in Babel of the inevitability of Yerushalayim's destruction. Perek Hei is the final stage of the symbolism. Yechezkel is directed to take a sword, a sharp sword, and shave all the hair on his body. He should then divide the hair into three parts and destroy each in a different manner. A third would be burned on the brick with Yerushalayim engraved on it. One third would be placed near the brick and would be destroyed by a sword. The final third would be scattered into the wind and then have a sword try to destroy it. Only a small portion of hair would be saved from these three fates. After this symbolic act, Yechezkel, quoting the words of Hashem, explains why the Jewish people deserved this fate. They have rejected Hashem's laws and rebelled against their mission. As a result of their decisions, the nations of the world will no longer relate to the Jewish people with respect. Instead, their national identity will now be mocked. They will be subject to anti-Semitism, oppression, and persecution. This parak concludes with the Nimshal, the explanation of what the symbolism from the beginning of the parak means and what the upcoming destruction of Yerushalayim will look like. It describes in horrific detail the death by famine, conquering armies, and then by persecution and exile. When I first started preparing these podcasts, a friend expressed concern about the feasibility of my teaching Yechezkel. At the time, I didn't understand what they were referring to. I thought they were talking about the fact that some of the content is challenging to understand. Thank God our people have been blessed with commentaries that shine the light on the most challenging sections of Torah. What makes Yechezkel hard, for me in this parak, is the rawness of what he is talking about. We generally only read descriptions of the Chorban, the destruction of the Yerushalayim, like those contained in this parak on Tisha B'Av, and those words are horrific. The words in this parak are as hard to read as the words we read on Tisha B'Av, which are meant to bring us to mourning. It is going to be a hard parak to learn and to teach. Yechezkel was living and prophesying at the same time of Yirmiyahu, yet his approach in this parak is very different. While Yechezkel is describing the horror of the upcoming siege, Yirmiyahu is busy in Israel trying to convince Zedekiyahu to change his foreign policy. Their different messages are rooted in the different goals they had based on their audience. Yirmiyahu lived in Israel, so through his words he could affect change. Yechezkel, living in exile, cannot change the behavior of those causing the exile. He was an outsider. He didn't give rebuke to the people living in Israel, as they were not his audience. What a lesson for us to learn, to only give Musar and try to change people on whom we might have an effect. His goal when writing these words was described in Perek Beis, V'yadu ki Navi haya besocham. They will know that a Navi lives amongst them. In Perek Gimel, Hashem tells Yechezkel in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ben Adam Tzofen Nesaticha Leves Yisrael, Son of Man, I have put you as a sentry for the house of Israel. Yechezkel is busy bolstering the faith of those around him and preparing them for the arrival of the traumatized few survivors who will be joining them in but a few years. Let us now examine a few of the themes and details from this parak. The first area we should examine is the symbolism contained in this parak. There is a Torah prohibition for a man to shave all of the hair on his head and his beard using a razor. Nowadays, men's razors use a scissor action instead of a razor, so they do not fall under this prohibition. How can Hashem tell Yechezkel in Pasuk Aleph, Va'ata ben Adam, kach lecha cherev chada, and you, son of man, take for yourself a sharp sword, tar hagalavim tikachen alach, a barber's razor you should take for yourself. A Navi of Hashem is not allowed to violate a Torah prohibition. While there are other examples of a Navi ignoring a positive Torah commandment, such as when Yirmiyahu does not get married, a Navi cannot actively violate a Torah prohibition. Also, if Hashem wants to demonstrate three manners of death, as described at the end of the parak, why does he choose that Yechezkel should use shaving his hair as an example? In the previous parakim, we have discussed different approaches as to whether the symbols were prophetic visions or actual events. In this parak, the Rambam, Radak, and even the Barbanel, who has taken the previous parakim literally, all agree that this parak happened in a vision. The Das Sofrim, in contrast, brings two other opinions that Yechezkel only shaved those areas of his head and face that were permitted to shave using a razor. Or, this was a hura'a sha'a, a temporary dispensation allowed for a Navi when the law isn't being changed permanently. Why such a strange symbol? The Metzudas David defines a Tar HaGalavim, a barber's razor, as a very sharp instrument. It cuts hair quickly and entirely. The Radak explains that this demonstrates that the severing of Bnei Israel from Hashem will be total and complete. Hair is something that covers and protects man. When removing all hair, a man is left exposed to the elements, much like Yerushalayim will be open to all who attack when Hashem severs his relationship with Bnei Israel. When hair is being burned or thrown to the wind, its destruction is particularly complete. In Pasuk Vayis, verse 2, we read how one-third of the hair will be burned in the midst of the city at the end of the siege. One-third will be struck by a sword around the city, and one-third will be thrown to the wind and hit by a sword. The words of the Pasuk teach us that what will happen to the Jewish people will be intentional and guided by divine providence. There is a scale, a judgment, a precise judgment, deciding who will die by famine and who by sword. The first third will die a death from hunger and from the disease that sets in during a siege, which, according to Das Mikra, is compared to death by fire in an oven. The second third will die outside of Yerushalayim in battles as they flee from the siege. The third group are those who thought they had escaped, or subsequently killed, such as Sidkiyahu, or those who fled to Egypt, led by Yochanan ben Kareach, against Yirmiyahu's advice. The destruction of the hair is not entirely final. A few of the hairs, as it says in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Ma'at b'mispar, just a few, are to be hidden in the corner of Yecheskel's garments. According to the Das Sofrim, a little bit of each of the groups will hobble into Bavel, only around 20,000 individuals total from the whole southern kingdom, and even fewer individuals will scatter to other locales. While these hairs will be tied up and to some degree guarded, the life of this remnant has now changed. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Umihem od tikach, and of them again you shall take, v'shlachta osam al tocha esh, and you shall cast them into the midst of the fire, v'sarafta osam ba'esh, and you will burn them in fire. That small remnant of individuals will begin anew, and yet they will be burned again, with the fires during the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, pogroms, Inquisition, the Holocaust. Their lives will never be secure as the fires of persecution always threaten their lives and their homes. The Navi now addresses why this is happening. Why was Hashem directing so much pain on this nation and this city? Pasuk Hey, verse 5 reminds us, Zos Yerushalayim, this Yerushalayim was supposed to be a role model. When the Kohen Gadol entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it tells us he entered Bezos, with this. With the merit of those things called Zos, he survived this holy encounter with the divine. Yerushalayim was meant to have a holiness that strengthened and supported and protected its Kohanim and its people. Instead, Pasuk Vav, verse 6 says, Vatemer es mishpatai lirish'ah, and she rebelled against my laws by being more wicked than the nations. The Das Sofrim explains how it could be possible for Yerushalayim to be worse than all the other cities in the world if the city itself still retains its holiness until today. Rather, what was degraded was its people. Those living in Israel never lived up to their full potential to teach the surrounding cultures how to act ethically with each other and spiritually with Hashem. All the other nations lived their lives and fulfilled their limited obligations. The Jewish people were meant to be a nation that set the bar high and taught through its example morality and faith to the whole world. By neglecting their sacred mission, they are considered to be more wicked than those for whom there were low expectations. Objectively speaking, Israel may have acted like all their neighbors, but in contrast to who they could have become, they despised Hashem's laws. In the next few psukim, the Navi is going to highlight the result of this negligence with the word lachain, therefore, as a result. The word lachain is used to start four psukim, and it's meant to highlight that it was their choices that caused the consequences. As a result of their choice to learn from the non-Jewish culture, instead of vice versa, each more severe level of punishment was added. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Va'asisi b'sochich mishpatim leinei ha'gayim, and I'll execute judgments in your midst in the sight of the nations. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Va'asisi vach es asher lo asisi, and I'll do to you that which I have never done. Yet, even in the midst of the punishment, there is hope. Ve'es asher lo e'esechamohu od, and I will not do any more like it. The Das Sofrim explains that only God, an all-seeing and all-powerful God, could make this claim. While Hashem was to almost completely destroy the Jewish people at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, at no other time of history would the destruction be as complete. the Jewish nation would sin again, but Hashem is promising that like the flood from the time of Noah, this event was never to be repeated. The reason it won't be repeated is that the Jewish people will never again be given so much responsibility for the other nations. There will never be a sovereign nation with the Beis HaMikdash in their own land and meant to influence and sway the whole world to connect to Hashem. With a more limited role, their punishment would be more limited as well. But during this time of the first Beis HaMikdash, when they neglected their role and sinned without rhyme or reason, Hashem will make them act in ways that have no rhyme or reason. Pasuk Yod, verse 10, fathers would eat their children, and children will eat their parents. Verse 11, since Bnei Yisrael defiled the Mikdash and his service with idols, or as Mitzvah David explains, with human child sacrifice, v'gam ani egra v'lo sachos eni, v'gam ani lo achmol. I will diminish you, my eyes will not spare, and I also will have no pity during the execution of the judgment. The punishments which Hashem will unleash during which he will have no pity are outlined in the next pasuk. The three types of punishment comprise the nimshal, the interpretation of the symbolic destruction of Yechezkel's hair from the beginning of the parak. The first third of hair burned in the fire corresponds to pasuk Yod Beis, verse 12, shlishtech badever yamusu uvrav yochlu besochech. A third part of you will die with pestilence, and with famine you shall be consumed in your midst. The second third of hair attacked by sword corresponds to fashlishis becherv yiplu sivivosayech. A third part shall fall by sword around you. The final third of hair that was to be scattered to the wind, vashlishis lachol ruach ezareh, v'cherv arik acharehem. A third part I will scatter to the wind, speaking about the Jewish people, and I will draw out a sword after them. If you notice in the pasuk, it doesn't say that the enemies will draw their sword after you. Rather, it says, I will draw my sword after you. Hashem is emphasizing in this pasuk that although it appears that the enemies are the ones who are wielding the sword, life and death are actually being decided by Hashem here. Instead of wasting their time fearing the human beings who are holding the sword, people who are facing the sword can understand that the one who is deciding their fate is Hashem. It introduces a certain level of calm when they understand that it is not the person, but Hashem who is in control of their destiny. And as horrific as this parak is, Pasuk Yud Gimel is both frightening and contains a glimpse of hope as well, before the parak continues to describe the horrors that are to come. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, V'chala api v'ani chosi chamasi bam. My anger will be set bent, and I will put my fury to rest. Hashem's anger will be allowed to reach its end for the extent of the sins profaning the Mikdash. But then, as Rav Boyer explains, the relationship can start to be rebuilt. V'yadu ki ani Hashem dibarti, as they will know that I, Hashem, have spoken when my anger finishes. Although the anger is finished, Bnei Yisrael will still be there to bear witness to the end of the punishment, and that it was done with clear intention by Hashem all along. In Pasuk Yudalid and Tesvav, verses 14 and 15, the punishments don't only include the three elements of physical suffering, famine, warfare, and exile, but it mentions that there will be a loss of status amongst the other nation, a psychological punishment. The fire that is described in the beginning of the parak that will continue to burn among the survivors finds its expression in the attitude of the non-Jews to the exiled Jewish people. According to the Das Sofrim, the nations will now mock and deride the Jewish people as foolish and dirty and not understand what is causing the intensity of the punishment. The Jewish people will be faced with anti-Semitism and persecution wherever they may travel. Rav Breuer concludes that this message of tragedy contains within it messages of hope. Any of the other nations would have been destroyed by a famine that's being described in this parak and described in the last two psukim. The Jewish people suffered but were not destroyed. As described in the symbol of weighing the hair at the beginning of the parak, Hashem is orchestrating these events precisely. He has promised that the punishment will arrive. Likewise, he will make sure that there will be survivors who can learn the lessons of this time and change for the better. This parak held the last of four symbolic acts which were meant to convince the Jews living in exile of what would be the fate of their families living in Israel. Hashem emphasizes that because they neglected their mission, they would now need to be punished. The famine, death, and chaos arriving in a few short years would be horrific, but they would survive. Though they may feel as if all of life is chaotic with no plan and no one in charge, as Tzaddikim and Rasha'im suffer in the same exact manner, in truth, all is being weighed and determined by Hashem. He knows exactly the scope of the punishment needed for change, and when it is over, the nation will look different, but will be able to rebuild. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther Bat Svi Yosef.